Okay, good morning. Welcome back to Living with Emuna. Once again, we are not in our usual location. I like our other location much better. I feel like down and connected to the people. I like it better, but we're still here. It's still Yeshiva Weeks. Not week, Yeshiva Weeks. And we are here to live with Emuna together. So we let the men sneak in, sit on the side for Living with Emuna, ordinarily a woman's shir. I want to begin, as we always do, with an attitude of gratitude and thank our generous sponsors, our series sponsors, Avi and Bella Morgan, in memory of Bella's mother, Dr. Ellen Chanzer, and in memory of Rabbi Dr. Brian Galbit, and generously sponsored in memory of the 30 fallen soldiers and alumni of B'nai David Mechina and Yeshiva Neli. And this week, highlighting Major Eliav Abram Abitbol, who was 36 years old, of Moshav Dotan, Hashem Yikom Damo, deputy company commander and reserve battalion, fell in southern Lebanon in October 2024 after serving 250 days. A married father of four, he was an exceptional human being. He donated a kidney to a stranger. And his wife, Tal, served for years as surrogate parents to at-risk youth. He survived by his parents, Chaya and Mordechai, his wife, Tal, their four children, and his four siblings. And we learn in his memory and express our gratitude. Today's shir is sponsored anonymously with gratitude to the Emunah shir and by Melissa and Jay Keen, Lisa and Ari Keen and Andrea Keen, in commemoration of their mother, Helen Klein's third Yuritzite in Shama Shadav and Aliyah, by Hannah Aluf in memory of her brother, Alan Wilder, Avram Yisachar, who loved learning, by friends of Adam and Ariana Reich, in memory of Dr. Rabin Goldman, Rija Bas Tzvi Yaakov, on her 10th Yuritzite, and in memory of Pesach David Ben Avram, a beloved father, grandfather, and role model, on his 6th Yuritzite, from his Pfeiffer children and grandchildren. May all their neshamos have a aliyah. Okay, we are going to begin, as we always do, with some fantastic emails and correspondence. Each one is a Dvar Torah. We're not delaying or avoiding the Torah as we read the emails. The emails themselves are a Dvar Torah and an inspiration, a reminder to not only learn Emunah, but to live Emunah. Because this year is not called learning Emunah. This year is called living with Emunah, because we are taking the Emunah and we are growing. We are implementing. We are actualizing. We're not just studying theoretical abstract concepts, proof and evidence. Is there a God? Does he exist? What's the proof? No, we're taking the Emunah, we're implementing it. And these emails are all authored by amazing, sincere, beautiful people who took the time to share how they felt that wink, that hug from Hashem, how they were able to not just learn about Emunah, but live Emunah. Rabbi Goldberg, thank you for the weekly Shiur on Emunah. I only discovered them recently, but they've already had a real impact on me. I had a discussive meeting you a while ago, so-and-so. This past year, I spent time in Otisville. Now, Otisville is not a place you go for on vacation. Otisville is a prison. It's a prison in upstate New York that is known for white-collar crime and a lot of Jewish inmates and a lot of observant Jewish inmates. I believe there are regular minyanim and daf yomi and kosher food. So this author of this email says, this past year they spent time in Otisville. Baruch Hashem, I'm out now and working hard to do real tshuva and make lasting changes in my life. While I was inside, a group of inmates asked me to teach a daily class. We chose Chovas HaLevavos, a sefer I had never properly learned before, especially as a boy that learned that, and he named his yeshivas. The group could not have been more diverse. Satmar and Chabad, yeshivish, modern, secular, young and old, religious and not. What struck me most was how deeply everyone spoke about Emunah, yet often in a way that felt more like a creed than a responsibility, as if believing alone would bring redemption. What I first came to feel very strongly is that real Emunah must come together with accountability. Yiras Shamayim is not only fear of Hashem, it is also seeing Hashem in our lives, moment to moment. And that awareness demands honesty, responsibility, and change. Without that, Emunah can quietly become an escape instead of a foundation. This past Shabbos while davening in shul, I was sitting next to someone I barely know. Out of nowhere, I find that since I've been very honest about my situation, people open up more about theirs. He told me he doesn't connect to shuls, but that he believes deeply in God. He then shared that after losing everything financially, what saved him was learning Chovas HaLevavos. He asked me to start a class and even offered to sponsor it. I was honestly shaken. It felt like a clear reminder of the message from Hashem to keep learning with others and how involved Hashem truly is in every step, especially when we try to move forward sincerely. I want to say thank you. This year articulates something I've lived very personally. Emunah is not a passive comfort, but the core of how we live, choose, and take responsibility, especially after failure, but also in redemption. I found it to be a very powerful email from somebody who says, not, I have such Emunah that even while I was there, I was meant to be there, and I was there for a reason, and now I'm out, and now I'm redeemed. But he associates emunah with responsibility, with accountability. That emunah can't ever become a cop-out. Emunah can't ever become cover. Emunah is not a way that we shirk responsibility or that we take inaction. Emunah is supposed to inspire us and motivate us to feel Hashem's presence, but also, therefore, a sense of mission and a deep and profound sense of responsibility. And I think this is also in our parsha. When the Jewish people are stuck between a rock and a hard place, the sea in front of them and the Egyptians in pursuit again behind them, and they're not sure what to do, and they do exactly what you'd think that Moshe would give them 5 stars on their chart. You'd think that Moshe would give them a huge round of applause. They start davening. After all, the slave nation, who were subservient and oppressed by Paro and Egypt, have in a short time come to learn and love Hashem, and in a time of crisis do exactly what you would think they should do, which is daven tim. And Hashem, through Moshe, tells them, hey, what are you doing? Close the sitter, close the tehillim, and start walking, and start walking. Because emunah doesn't become an excuse or a cop-out or the ability to sit on the couch and wait for a miracle from above. Close the sitter, close the tehillim, and open the pages to look for a job. Close the sitter, close the tehillim, and call the shadchan. Close the sitter, close the tehillim, and take a difficult but cold, hard look at your life and say, what do I have to take responsibility? How did I end up here? What mistakes did I make? How can I ensure I never make them again and use my story to help other people? The message Hashem through Moshe was telling the people was, yes, I'm here. And yes, the successful outcome only comes because of my involvement. Of course, you have to let go and let God, and you have to invite and welcome me in and recognize that I'm a partner in all your success, but you have to be the partner. You have to take your action. You have to do your part. Every year, Parshas B'Shalach, which includes the Shira, the song, and includes the Parshas Haman. So people read the Parsha and they say, I'm guaranteed a good income. I'll make my livelihood as long as I read the Parshas Haman. I'm all for reading Parshas Haman. I'm all for reading Pitum HaKedoshim from a klaf, if that's your thing. I'm all for putting a key in your challah, if that's your thing. I'm all for all of these things only when they increase emunah, only when they contribute to the recognition, not that some shortcut or some form of sorcery or some superstition, only when you recognize that all of it is meant to lead to the Ribbono Shel Olam, the Almighty. He's in charge, he's in control, and this reminds me that he holds the key to my livelihood. He holds the key to my success. So I put a key in the challah to remind me the man fell from heaven, and so too, my customers, my clients, my portfolio, my income, my net worth, it will all, like man, fall from Shemayim, but only when I do my work, only when I make my effort, only when I take my initiative. Read the Parshas Haman, and of course, read the Parshas Haman, and remember the man falls from heaven. And that motivates me that while I'm at work and before I go into my next meeting or try to get my next client or take out my next ad, that I say a parak of Tehillim, Ribbono Shel Olam, help me be successful because you're in charge, you're in control. It's not a cop-out. You're not going to get better if you don't take your medicine, go to the doctor and do your therapy, but you sit on the couch saying, Hashem, make a miracle. It's a complicated Ramban who thinks that if you're on a high enough level, that will work. But if you're not, and I would venture to say most of us, if not all of us, are not, then Hashem says, yeah, you got to go to the doctor, take your medicine. I've allowed breakthrough in medicine and science and understanding to help you recover and get better. You've got to get a job and then you'll make parnasa. And of course, daven to me for the right job and for success at the job and for clients and customers in the job. But we can't allow emunah, as the author of this email says, to become a cop-out. It's seeing Hashem in our moments demands honesty, responsibility, and change. Without that, emunah can quietly become an escape instead of a foundation. Emunah is not, I can't deal with it, I have such anxiety, I don't know what's going to happen, I don't want to do anything. I know, I'll just take the shot called emunah. I'll just swallow this pill called emunah. And then I have license to not have to think about it. Then I can let go and I fall and surrender into God's hands and I don't have to do anything. And whatever happens, it'll just be on Him. That's not authentic emunah, that's counterfeit, that's fraudulent, that's fake. Real emunah is responsibility, accountability, initiative, effort. And now whatever the outcome is after all that, that's what's up to Hashem. That's what's up to Hashem. But you can't sit at home on your couch and think anyone's going to knock on your door and drop off a brown paper bag filled with cash. That's not what Parshas Haman is going to bring. That's not our faith. That's not our God. That's not our religion. That's not our belief. That's not what it's all about. It's about taking that responsibility, and I admire him after his experience for doing exactly that. Dear Rabbi Goldberg, Baruch Hashem, my husband and I live in Eretz Yisrael. Today we went to rent a car so we can head up north for Shabbos, hoping to pick it up during my husband's Bein Hastarim and leave right after Seder. As is the norm, we were running late and slightly stressed. In the taxi, we davened that we not get the same rental agent from last time, the one who took a full hour to figure things out. Naturally, when we arrived, he was the only person available. As he worked, very slowly, my husband and I kept looking at each other, saying we're exactly where we're meant to be. Baruch Hashem, it actually went much faster than expected, and we crossed the street in good spirits to the other office to pick up the car. That's when the moment happened. I started chatting with the man behind the desk, and Baruch Hashem, everything is great. He wasn't wearing a kippah, but he pointed behind him to the doorway where there was a small plaque right under the mezuzah that said, "Say, I love you, Hashem." I honestly froze. I had just been listening to your shiur about putting a sign like that under the mezuzah to remind ourselves of Hashem's love the moment we walked through a door. And suddenly there it was, in the most random place unimaginable, a rental car office. I truly couldn't believe my eyes. I got so excited, I told him, "I listened to Rabbi Goldberg's Emunah Shiurim, and he was just talking about it." And he looked at me completely blank and said, "I have no idea what you're talking about. My boss put up that sign." My husband and I just burst out laughing. In that moment, I felt the biggest, clearest hug from Hashem saying, "I'm right here." I'll admit, keeping my cool was harder later when my husband made a wrong turn that added 20 minutes of standstill traffic to our already long ride. But even then, I knew Hashem loves me and I love him too. I'm thankful for the shiurim. They inspire and lift my spirits to keep me going, especially in moments like this when Hashem's messages feel so personal and so clear. I attached a picture of the mezuzah plaque. You can see the exact moment I'm talking about, and there it is. Because first we had our Psalm 23 sightings, now we have our mezuzah plaque sightings, and we can have it because we can all put it up under our mezuzah. I love you, Hashem. Dear Rebbe, my name is such and such. I've been listening to your Munashir for the past year or so. They're truly amazing. Two things to share. Number one, early this year was one of my first weeks being in Eretz Yisrael for the year, and I found myself in an unfamiliar place for Shabbos. During Friday night davening, I missed saying Vayichulu with the Tzibur, and in the moment I was a little bogged down. I didn't know if I'd had the courage to go up to someone and ask them to say it with me. At the end of davening Friday night, we say Vayichulu, which is a description of God as the creator of heaven and earth. Shabbos is a commemoration of creation. Just like God created 6 days, rested on the seventh, we imitate and emulate him. And we commemorate that by testifying to him as creator. And there is a custom some have to not say it alone. Testimony is always said in pairs, takes two witnesses. So two witnesses say Vayichulu together, and some have the custom, therefore, of when you're up to it with the chazan, you say it all together as a tzibur, Vayichulu Shemayim Va'aretz. But if you were still davening the Amida when they started and you missed it, you find someone else and you say, "Will you say Vayichulu with me?" Happens to be the chazanish and others don't like it. They say it's not testimony, you don't need two people. How do you know that? When are you saying it? At night. And there is no Maisa Bezdin at night. There is no testimony in halacha at night. So it doesn't really mean testimony. It doesn't have to be in two, but there is a custom, and he had that custom, and he was looking for a second person, but he didn't have the courage, he was shy, and he just started. As davening was coming to an end, I realized something different. The minyan started saying, Tehillim Chaf Gimel. Little did I know this was the minhag of that shul Friday night, to say Psalm 23. Put a smile on my face, because in the moment, all I could think of was the Emunah Shir, and it reminded me that everything was from Hashem. 2 minutes later, I was walking out of shul, a stranger said, "Could you say Vayichulu with me?" Wow. Number two. I don't remember which Rebbe this was quoted from. One of my friends told me that it's never a coincidence. It's a ka incidence. Ka is the name of Hashem, Yud and Hey, that we pronounce ka. It's not a coincidence. It's a ka incidence. It always pops into my head while listening to Shirim. So I thought I would share. Thank you for that. Hi, Rabbi Goldberg. Every week as I've been listening to Shirim and hearing about the Psalm 23 sightings, I always get excited because it's also the parak I connect to very much. Not because of the words necessarily, though that's something I'm working on connecting to more, because my birthday is June 23rd. Although, as I always say, that's a Gregorian secular birthday. We have to follow the Jewish Hebrew calendar. That's our calendar. Those are our birthdays. Anyway, I've always had my jersey numbers when I play sports to be 23. That's also Michael Jordan and LeBron James, although we shouldn't put them in the same sentence. One is the GOAT. And the other is a imitation. Well, it's exciting to have my Gregorian birthday on that day. What's even more exciting is that my Hebrew birthday is Chaf Gimel Sivan. So here, this holy Yid, his English Gregorian birthday is the 23rd, and his Hebrew birthday is the 23rd. So I get my double whammy and get to have both my birthdays on the 23rd, and I'll have to thank my dad for my Hebrew birthday being when it is, since my mother went into the hospital in labor. My father told the doctor I need to be born before sundown. Obviously confused, the doctor asked why. My father explained it was the anniversary of his grandfather's death, and he wanted me to be born that day. Another cool piece about Chav Gimel Sivan, if you check out Megillas Esther, chapter 8, Pasuk 9, it is also the day Achashverosh's scribes were brought to write Mordechai's letter to all the Jews of the nation, that they have the king's approval to fight back. So yes, it's always nice to have Psalm 23, but I'm grateful to be continuously reminded of it every day that I live. Thank you for the shiur. It's always been getting me through my day as I navigate my new life in Israel post-Aliyah. In a recent shiur, you spoke about strengthening Emuna before you actually need it, to work out the muscles so you're strong when you need it. I told you the story of the person, Arkav Bachmanian, saved his life. When he had the heart attack, he had already been working out because of the happy clappy minion. I'm so grateful I started listening 2 years ago because now I'm able to tap into the challenges that are thrown my way. I saved the kind words for the end so you wouldn't skip them. Shabbat Shalom, Meretz Yisrael. And then a follow-up email immediately. And I realized today is also January 23rd and I sent the email at 10:23. So 23 everywhere. 23 all around, 23 everywhere. Okay. So many, we could spend our entire shiur, and it's so hard to choose which ones to read. I'm new to listening to Living with Emuna. Last week, I decided to go to the JCC to run on the treadmill. While exercising, I was listening to shiur. While you were reading the dollar amount on the cash register receipt, the time counter on my treadmill hit 23 minutes exactly. Exactly as we said, 23? People are finding 23 everywhere. This shiur is brought to you by the number 23. How crazy was that? I look forward to listening to your inspiring words, be able to see Yad Hashem even more clearly, and a beautiful email, 23 minutes. Also a little bit of a flex, 23 minutes on the treadmill, straight, 23 minutes, even. Amazing, beautiful. By the wife of the bar mitzvah teacher. Okay, beautiful. Next. Oh, so many good ones. I have a whole book just in the last week. Okay, here's another one from an amazing listener. Dear Rabbi Goldberg, I hope this message finds you well. First, I want to thank you for all that you do for the community and the world. I want to share an inspiring Emunah story that recently took place in my life. I was pregnant with twin girls, and while I had a name in mind for one of them, I was struggling to find the perfect name for the other. I truly loved a particular name, but my husband was hesitant, concerned it might not be well received in our community. After speaking to my husband about the name, we decided to wait and think about it. Later on the same day, my husband was listening to a shiur by one of his favorite Rabbanim, who might be coming this Shabbos to BRS, and suddenly the Rav, seemingly out of nowhere, mentioned the name in question. The Rav laid out a beautiful explanation for the name and confirmed it was indeed a common name within our shared community. Hearing that, my husband was reassured and ultimately embraced the name. It was truly a moment of Hashgacha Prata since we were initially hesitant about committing to the name, and along came the shiur at the perfect time, and incredible, beautiful, adorable little twins, one of which carries that name. Okay, next. I don't know. How do I do this? How do I choose? Today, 9 Shvat is my brother's Yahrzeit. He was 16 when he passed away 47 years ago. His name was JJ. Our last name begins with a G. Avoidance of shutting down was my go-to way of handling the loss. It took a long time before I could regularly visit his grave, a short drive from my house. Baruch Hashem, I eventually achieved it. A few years ago, we moved to Florida, and visiting my brother regularly was no longer an option. 14 months ago, I traveled back to care for my mother and end up staying for 7 months. I visited my brother and I was there for his yahrzeit. His yahrzeit fell on a Friday. I went to the kever first thing in the morning, Davin cried and put a rock on the headstone. I turned to leave and spontaneously, inexplicably, I turned back to the kever and cried out loud, "I haven't seen you in such a long time. Can't you come visit me?" My father, Olav HaShalom, had come to me in a dream more than once, and I was thinking and hoping my brother would do the same. An hour after leaving my brother, having completed some Shabbos errands, I found myself sitting in traffic. I looked at the car in front of me and noticed the license plate. Oh my gosh. I was completely shocked. The plate read JJG, my brother's initials, and the number was 9205. My mind began racing to see if it had significance. I added up 9205, 16. The plate read JJG, 16. Now I began again to cry, this time in gratitude. Thank you, Hashem. Thank you, Hashem. You heard me. You answered me. My brother was able to say hello. How lucky I am. You can well imagine I chased the poor driver down until I could get a clear picture of the license plate. And here is a copy, for those who don't believe, of a clear picture of somewhere in this pile. Ah, the license plate, JJG. So again, each of these stories are meant to tell us you could live life. These are random and coincidences, and even a license plate is telling us a message. Hugs and winks from Hashem. whether watching the right shiur at the right moment to hear the right thing to reassure you, or seeing the right message on a treadmill, or seeing the right message on a license plate. Hashem is talking to us all day long. Is our antenna extended? Are we picking up the signal? Are we hearing the message? Are we feeling and embracing the hug from Hashem? That is the only question. That is the only question. I want to share with you a Hashgacha Prata story that happened to us in the last hour. My husband was meant to fly out from Israel to show in New Jersey tomorrow morning. With all the uncertainty about imminent war, closing airspaces, getting stuck in this evening, we canceled his flight. 3 minutes later, our daughter posted on our family chat that the army called her husband, told him he has to be down south, 10 a.m. tomorrow morning, Tzav Shmona. Hashem didn't leave us too long with uncertainty as to whether we made the right decision for canceling my husband's flight. They believe he'll be in Gaza for a few days looking for the last hostage. This was right before, thank God, he was found. Our daughter sent the following message to the family I want to share with you. My husband was just called up for Tzav Shmona. He has the schus to defend Am Yisrael. This is their daughter's message. After he was called up, after having served countless times, he has the schut to defend Am Yisrael, destroy our enemies, and bring home our last holy, precious hostage. Please have him in your tefillot so he should be a ne'eman messenger of Hashem to be part of the most holy army. And that Be'ezrat Hashem he should come home healthy and quickly after a successful mission. B'sarot tovot yeshuot v'nechamot. That was her emunah moment and perspective. Why her husband canceled his flight so he'd be home to help with the grandchildren. How her daughter had this incredible. Not only the holy soldiers who've been fighting, but how about their wives? Heroes, we used to call heroines, in their own right, for their sacrifice and selflessness, for their mesirus nefesh and perspective, and for the mission that was fulfilled and accomplished in its own miraculous fashion. Because apparently there were 20 dentists examining 250 bodies throughout a cemetery. They had gone through 249 and he was the 250th. And his name is Ron, Resh Nun, which is the numerical value of 250. And that was the final. And he was brought back. And if you haven't yet, watch the eulogies at the funeral that took place today. You want to see the strength, the courage of the Jewish people. It's worth watching. It's worth watching and it's worth seeing. Okay, let's get back into our text. Okay, one more, because we're on this topic of our holy, precious soldiers. Dear Rabbi Goldberg, an update in an Amunah story. A while ago, I wrote about my son who suffered from PTSD from the Gaza war. You may remember I read that email. And how painful it was for us to watch him struggle. I want to share an update. 3 weeks ago, Baruch Hashem, he got married. I was scared and unsure if it was the right step. I tried to have Amunah and keep going, even though my fear and anxiety took over. Baruch Hashem, he's doing so much better. He's happier. He talks more. He shares more. Slowly, we're beginning to see his name coming back. He has started talking about his future, about what he wants to do professionally, which school he wants to attend. I'm so grateful. Looking back, I see that if I had trusted Hashem more, I probably would have saved myself so much worry. I'm sharing this not only to share the pain, but also to share the joy. Hodu Lashem Kitov. And now for my Amunah story. Every week I listen to the shiur and hear all the emails you read, people sharing their Amunah and their winks from Hashem. And I keep thinking, what's wrong with me? Why don't I see anything? Why isn't he winking at me? I used to see Hashem everywhere in the small details of daily life. I had so many stories, but over the last few years, it felt like there was a block. I tried to stay aware to keep my eyes open, but my heart felt very heavy. I missed that feeling so much. A few days ago, I decided to go to the Kotel. I went to Daven to connect because I felt out of touch, disconnected, and a little alone. I Daven for my children, for myself, and for everything going on around us. I'm supposed to travel this week with my husband, and with all the uncertainty in Israel, I've been feeling very nervous. The trip is important, but I've been uneasy about leaving. I kept telling myself, embrace your place. You're exactly where you're meant to be. If it's not meant to happen, it won't. And if it is, then it is okay. Still, the nerves were there. This morning, I said to myself, I hadn't davened properly in a long time, and I wanted to start saying brachot again. I also decided I wanted to take a siddur with me on the trip, so I opened the cabinet where I kept my siddurim. As I was looking through them, two siddurim suddenly fell to the floor. I bent down to pick them up, and a small card with the Lubavitcher Rebbe slipped out and landed beside them. On the card were the words, Nisiyah Tova, have a good trip. I looked up and said, thank you, Hashem. That was it, my wink. I felt instantly calm. I knew everything would be okay. I'm so grateful for that bracha, for that quiet, loving reminder that he's with me. She got her wink that she deserves. Siddur fell out. A card fell out, nervous about a trip, with the Rebbe telling her, and we're reading it together on Yud Shvat, Nisiyah Tova, have a safe trip. The messages are all around us. They're all around us. So be a warrior, not a worrier. I told you about the new pillow I got in my office on my couch. I look at it every day when I'm at my desk doing work or meeting with people. Be a warrior, not a worrier. And Hashem is sending us that hug, and He's pushing our back forward. And He has His arm around us. And if we extend that antenna, we'll pick up the messages. Sometimes they're little, they're subtle, they're nuanced, they're hard to find. And other times, they're explicit. The book falls off the shelf with a card and a note, and it's explicit. But either way, we've got to be looking forward, and we'll find it. And many had to this week. Some of you might still be stuck. Very little sympathy for you, because there's a lot worse places to be stuck than the free, sunny state of Florida, coming to Emunah Shir in person. But there are people who had all kinds of other plans. And they came for a few days, and because of the weather, the extreme weather in most of the country, that deposited and dumped an insane amount of snow, people's flights rearranged, and you could have dealt with that and handled that. You could have become resentful and bitter and frazzled and upside down, and I gotta get back to work, and my kids gotta get back to school, and I gotta get back. Or you could have said, this is an adventure. I'm along for the ride, whatever it will be. And I am where I'm meant to be. And what am I meant to do while I'm here? What's next? Vacation more, go to more shiurim, volunteer, make new friends, visit people. I find myself where I am, and what's my mission in that place? Not how do I desperately try to escape? Sometimes, yes, I want to get out of rehab, get out of the hospital, get out of Otisville, get out of wherever one finds themselves when they desperately don't want to be there. But after, you can't use emunah as the excuse. They have to take initiative and make an effort and do ishtadlus. But after, to lean in and accept, I am where I'm meant to be. This is why, and this is where, and what is the mission, and what is the message while I'm here? We said in the Parsha Shir yesterday, I won't revisit. Yesterday someone told me, why are you bringing the Emunah Shir into the Parsha Shir? I won't bring the Parsha Shir into the Emunah Shir. This is like Kelayim over here. You got to be careful. You're not allowed to mix Basa B'chalav. You're not allowed to mix the Shirim. I didn't know we were so strict. But in any case, in yesterday's Parsha, Hashem takes us out of Egypt, and we start to walk towards our freedom, our march, and our journey towards our future. And He takes us this circuitous route. And the Torah tells us, Lan Chosam HaDerech, Hashem is leading the way. And we learned a beautiful piece by Rav Shmuel Berenbaum, who talks about this is our belief. He's always leading our way. Hamechen mitzadei gaver. He is preparing our footsteps. He is leading the way. He's leading the way. Wherever we are, it's where we're meant to be. Api Hashem yachanu ve'api Hashem yisa'u. He tells us, time to go, time to stop, time to turn. Wherever we find ourselves, we are His partner. We use our creativity, ingenuity, initiative, and effort to try to determine our next steps. But wherever they take us, whatever those next steps are, they're always from above. They're always from Him. On the bottom page, Kuf Lamed Aleph, Rav David Abuchatzera, Shari Tefillah. The last idea that we learned was that we use the righteous, we use those who have incredible emunah, and we use them as our hotspot. If we're struggling, if we're buffering, if we have a low-speed connection, we connect, we use a hotspot, tzaddikim, and then we can attach our needs, attach our tefillos, ride their coattails. Kein hadavar bebakashas sarchi gashmias. Turn the page now on the top of Kuf Lamed Beis. That when we couch and present our physical material needs in the context of spiritual holiness, we're more likely to be answered. We've shared this the last few weeks. We've been learning this. But I want to reiterate and I want to reinforce this idea. All of us, we come before Hashem and we desperately daven for good health. Solve and heal those aches and pains, those ailments, those injuries, or even those diagnoses that are much more severe. Hashem, help Parnassah. I don't know how I'm going to pay my bills. Life is so expensive. How? How will I get it all done? Hashem, help me in the relationships that feel broken. Make them whole again. Hashem, help me or someone I love find their shidduch. No more loneliness. Help them. Help them with a child. A beautiful meeting with the leaders of a time yesterday. The incredible work that they do. But Nebuch, how many people need them? How many calls they got last year to help counsel and give strength to those people going through primary, secondary infertility? You know what that represents as a percentage of Jewish people? There's so many who feel, I need you, Hashem. But, says Rav David Abuchatzera, quoting so many tzaddikim, we can turn to Hashem and we can say, Hashem, give me parnasa and a job. How many interviews, how many resumes do I have to send out? How much do I have to sit and wait and hope and think this is the one only to find out it's not? Hashem, how many shidduchim, how many first dates do I have to go on? How many times do I have to get all made up and think, this is it, this is going to be the one, only to find out it's not. Api Hashem yachanu, api Hashem yisa'u. That I thought this was my last stop, but it turns out I have to get back on the journey again. Hashem, help me in whatever area we're davening for. So Hashem looks at us and he says, I love you and you're my child and I'm inclined and I want to, but give me one good reason. You know, parents sometimes say that to a child. Can I go? Can you give me? And you say, sure, and I love you and I want you to be happy, but give me a good reason. Why should I let you skip school tomorrow? Why should I let you buy that thing, order that thing online? Why should I let you order apps, desserts, and a drink? Now they don't even ask that. They just, why should I? Why should I? So Hashem says, why should I? Why should I? And herein, what answer will you give? What answer will you give? When Hashem says, why should I? Why should I heal your injuries and ailments? Why should I give you your spouse, your shidduch, your bashert? Why should I give you that child that desperately want, or that grandchild? Why should I bring peace into the, why should I? What's the answer? What's the answer? You could say, because I really want it. Because I really need it. Please, I really like it. I really want it. All my friends have it. Everybody else is doing it. It looks so fun. Tastes so good. I really want it. Or you could say, you know what? What do you mean, why Hashem? Because I want to serve you. And I can't serve you. I can't fulfill my mission. I can't be most loyal to you if I don't have it. I need my health. How can I be your agent? How can I be your ambassador? How can I be your messenger if I don't have my health and my energy and my strength and my faculties and my function? How, Hashem? Like Chana, Vatespalal not El Hashem, Al Hashem. You know why I want a child, Hashem? Because this world is so broken and this world is so corrupt and this world is so confused and I want to raise a child who will light the world on fire. Hashem, let me be your partner. Give me a child so I can train them and raise them and educate them and then dedicate them to bringing great light into this world, to repairing and redeeming it. Hashem, don't do it for me because I really want a child. Don't do it for me because I need someone to bring me my slippers and my newspaper. I need a child to carry my name because I want a child. I want to attend their simcha. It's not about me. Like Chana, she wasn't vatespalal el Hashem. She was vatespalal al Hashem. She davened not for herself. She said, Hashem, for you, for you. Hashem, give me parnasa, because how can I fulfill my mission and my purpose? How can I accomplish the goals that you have for me? How can I realize the dreams there are for me if I don't have an expense account? If I'm worried about a roof over my head, if I'm worried about food in my family's mouth, how can I be out there changing the world? How can I be your ambassador, your agent? How can I be your messenger? So this is the secret to tefillah. The secret to tefillah is to be prepared that when we ask Hashem for all those things, genuinely and real and raw, and turn to Him and ask Him from the bottom of our heart, from the bottom of our heart. I'll tell you something, I'm about to embarrass my family and myself. I'm not a cook, I'm not a chef. I've got one go-to meal that I make, special occasion. It's not a kale salad, as you can imagine. It is delicious steak. I got steak. And I make homemade, incredible steak French fries with it, fried onions. This is a whole meal I present. My kids are visiting. I wanted to make good by them. I did it. I heated up my oil. First of all, my kids got me an apron. Got me a beautiful apron. Anyway, I won't tell you what it says on it. That embarrassing, I'm not going to tell you. But I put on my apron. Still had my tie all the way, but I put on my apron. All my ingredients, cleared out the kitchen. I can't have anyone interfering. I can't have anyone near me when I'm cooking. Cleared out the kitchen. I got my ingredients. You got to dry the steak, salt, pepper. You got to let it sit. I'll tell you another time how you do it right. I heat up my oil, and I was trying to be real efficient because I make a batch of regular fries and then a batch of sweet potato French fries. And they're unbelievable. Are they the best French fries you ever ate in your life? Atara, Tamar. They're crunchy and delicious on the outside, and soft and melt in your mouth on the inside. And they're not the little shoestring, tiny, at the restaurant they're trying to get away with. I'm talking about a proper, thick steak fry. Proper, proper. Salted just right, proper. Fresh, unbelievable. I heated up the oil, and this is, my kids have been hearing about this meal and they're visiting and they said, we want a shot. This is my chance to impress them. And if you don't, let's just say you hear about it. So I heat up the oil and I had to be efficient because I had two batches. So I cut up a lot of the exactly the right ratio and I put them all in and they're not crisping up and they're starting to stick together and they're getting mushy. And I literally felt more panic than before the Shabbos Shuvah and Shabbos Agudah Drasha combined. I felt more panic than before I've spoken at Mar-a-Lago or visited the White House combined. How am I going to present this failed French fry? How am I going to give this mushy, stuck together, big plate of failure flop? I'll never hear the end of it. I'll never hear the end of it. So I literally put down my utensils and I offered a tefillah to Hashem. I'm not exaggerating. I davened over those French fries. I said, Ribbono Shalom, in the great scheme of things and the things that you're paying attention to, this is not the top of the list. This isn't the most important. And if you have to choose which of my tefillos to give a yes to, it's not this. But, if you find room in your heart, and if I have any worthiness in me, please help these French fries turn out, okay? Because I'm never going to hear the end of it. My whole reputation and my family, this is it. Please, please. And that was it. Fries crisped up. I had to do a little more intervention to them. I took some of them out. I gave them some space. Turns out they need to breathe. You know, like a Sefer Torah, mezuzah, lahavza, they have to be mukav gvil. The halacha in the Sefer Torah is that every letter needs to be surrounded by klaf. If two letters are touching, it's puzzle, it's treif. Because every letter is a Jew, and two Jews don't compare and compete. Each one is its own and unique. Mukav gvil. Lahavdil, each fry has to be mukav gvil with oil. They can't be touching, they stick together. I learned, and I'm happy to share with you another time. Only for those members of the BRS Global, by the way. Maybe for the highest levels of the Global, I'll even make this dinner. Maybe. You got to give over a really high amount, and I'll make you a big dinner. Why am I telling you this ridiculously embarrassing story and example? Ridiculously embarrassing example. Because I'm trying to tell you that Emunah is not only about the moments of Hashem bring world peace, and Hashem make enormous, it's in the everyday little moments of life. Let the French fries turn out okay. Let the dough rise. Let the kugel turn, let the challah be just, it's the everyday life. Let the carpool go smoothly. Let the conversation go well. Let me get a good seat at the Emunah Shir. Let the coffee hit the spot. Let the little things in life are also invitations and opportunities to Hashem. Hashem. Now, back to what we're learning. I said, Hashem, if the French fries turn out great, it'll be a huge Kiddush Hashem. If these French fries are a flop, it's a Chil Hashem. I've been talking all about how amazing they are and how much you empower me. And if these French fries flop, it'll be a massive Chil Hashem in my family. You have to present everything in every tefillah. When Hashem says, why should I do that for you? Why should I give that to you? Why should I answer you in the affirmative? The answer can't be because I want it, because I'm hungry, because everyone else has it. Please. The answer has to be for Hashem. It's an entirely different orientation on how we come to Daven. We come to Daven, we open our calendar and schedule, as we spoke recently about, and we look at what's on tap today, and we say, Hashem, I need your help. I have this meeting, I have this effort, I have this appointment, I have this journey, and I need your help in each one. So first of all, our davening then becomes very personal, very individual. We're not just opening some siddur and reciting the same text over and over and over again. Same Shmona Esrei, same brachas, the same words, the same slach lanu, the same three steps. It's not repetitive and redundant. We're not just saying the same thing again. Why not? Because every day there's a new me. Every day it's a new world. And every day my calendar is filled with new things on it. And so every day I have something new to daven about. Because every day there are new things that I need his help. And the only way I can have success is if he indeed helps me. So every day my davening is by definition different because I've inserted the personal individual things in the ways that I need him. Hashem, I'm making a big dinner tonight, let it come out well. Hashem, I got a big meeting together, let it go smoothly. Hashem, I have a bit, whatever it is, I have a big interview coming up, I have a big date I'm going on, I have a big conversation I have to have, I have a big journey that I'm taking, and let the flight be on time. Every day is different, and therefore every day there are different things to daven about, and therefore davening never gets rote and stale. Davening is always dynamic and exciting. I don't sit down with my spouse and say, why do we have to talk? We talked yesterday, and we talked 2 days ago, and we talked 3 days ago. Why do I have to talk every day? Why do I have to talk again? How was your day? My day was like, come on, why do we have to keep talking? if you're in a healthy, good marriage, this week's parsha also, you're in the minority. And if you're in a healthy, good marriage, one of the things to be thankful for every day is that you're experiencing a miracle as great as the splitting of the sea, which statistically we see today. If you're in a good marriage, you don't say, why do I have to talk every day? You say, I can't wait to talk every day. I can't wait to tell you about my day. Because the day began with what's on tap today, and the day ends with, how did the day go? No, fill me in, tell me. That meeting you were worried about, that appointment you were concerned with, that effort, that initiative, that thing you were excited to do, new, how did it go? How did it go? In a healthy marriage, there's a bookend. It begins with what's on tap today. It's a shared experience and also a shared davening. Because our davening is not only for ourselves, our davening is also for the person who completes us, who's our other half. We want their success and their outcome too. So every day should start with what's on tap today, and every day should end with, you're allowed to talk in between, but every day should end with, how did it go today? And you never say, we did this routine yesterday. We did this routine last week. Enough with this routine. Can't we take a break? That's a red flag. That's a bad sign. In a healthy marriage, you say each and every day, I want to have that conversation. There's no one I want to confide or share more with than you. That's what you should be looking for those dating, watching, listening, or here. That's what you're looking for. You're looking for someone on the other side of that table on that date who you will want to every day ask them what's on tap today and share what's on tap for you. And every day at the end of the day, share how that day went. One of the things I tell people dating is when you get a phone call from that person that you're dating, when their number comes up on the caller ID, does your heart stop? Are you so excited to take that call? Do you can't wait to hear what they have to say and you have things to share with them? Or do you say, ooh, can I press ignore again? Do I have to answer this time? How often are they going to call? Do we need to talk? That's it. Before any conversation happens, you know so much about if this is the right one just by how you feel when the caller ID comes up. The caller ID, when the call comes in and you see that number, it tells you so much already about if that person is the one for you. Do you want to say every day what's on tap and share what's on tap for you? And do you want to end every day by talking about how did it go? What happened? How did you deal? How did the person react? How did it come out? The same is with the Ribono Shel Olam. That's what the Shari Tefillah is telling us. Our Tefillah is Ribono Shel Olam. Shacharis is, here's what's on tap. And Maariv is, thank you for how it went. Or this didn't go exactly as I hoped. I really hope we can fix it tomorrow. But every day is that dynamic, ongoing, individual, creative conversation with the Ribono Shel Olam. It's never stale, it's never rote, it's never old, and it's never on repeat. It's always something new, because we're new, and our life is new, and the world is new. And what we face today, we had no idea even existed yesterday. And today, we say thank you for the things that we asked for yesterday. We fail in that so often, so often. So by the way, I tried to remember that after the fries came out, as a good friend of mine says, home run, I said, thank you, Hashem. I know that wasn't because of me. Thank you for letting the fries, simple things like the fries. Last night, we had an incredible presentation. The shul was packed. Loe al-Sharif, Saudi-born UAE activist for peace with Israel, between Arab countries and Israel, Muslims and Jews. We had a conversation last night here for over an hour, which we'll share online. It was professionally recorded. He's incredible. He's very special. He is unfortunately in the tiny minority. And if we could run him through the copy machine, if we could celebrate and elevate his voice to have more of an impact on the Muslim Arab world, we would have a future and we might have a shot. So I was concerned, were people going to come? I met him in Abu Dhabi and we invited him to come and we believe in his message. And I was nervous. Part of the goal was people come to support and encourage what he stands for and the life he lives and the risks he takes. He has almost 1 million followers online and he takes positions that aren't simple for him to take. And I was nervous. So I davened to Hashem, please let people show up. Please let them come. Please let them get excited. Please let it work where we're posting it. I davened Maariv after the event and I said, Hashem, thank you so much. That was amazing. The mics worked out. The speakers worked out. The conversation flowed, even though I didn't know exactly at the beginning what we were going to talk about. Thank you. We asked before, please. And afterwards, when it works out, or even if it doesn't exactly, we say, thank you. And how often we remember to say, please. And how infrequently do we remember to say afterwards, thank you. Yecheved and I interviewed Rebbetzin Schechter from Behind the Bima. I think it's coming out next week. And she talked about, as Rebbetzin Schechter, a gadol b'Yisrael, and she in her own right, an incredible person, And their apartment in Washington Heights is regularly visited by people who desperately need. They need a psak in halacha. They need an intervention. They need staka. They need a bracha. They need tefillah. And she was talking about how infrequently the people who came in crisis and desperation ever follow up and say, thank you, this is how it went. I got married. I had a baby. I recovered and I healed. She said, my husband, Rav Schechter, is still davening for people who are all together, but he has no idea. He's still davening for people who have a baby and they have five children. Because how infrequently do people follow up and say, just want to let you know and thank you. So the Ribbono Shel Olam feels that way too. When we need him, when there's crisis, when we're desperate, when the fries are a big flop, ooh, there's no atheists in a kitchen. There's no atheist in an apron. Then everyone's davening hard. Let the kugel come out. Let the challah rise. Let the cake, I remember the way my grandmother, Alei Hashalom, used to daven over that sponge cake. Also, nobody could talk to it or look at it while the sponge cake had to rise and become spongy. She had a hole. She turned it upside down on top of a soda bottle, I think. It was in my childhood. I vividly remember her sponge cake. Her sponge cake, the love, the affection. That was the precursor to sourdough. Today, everybody feeds and nourishes and loves and protects. They take out insurance on the sourdough. Halavai, they would love their spouse as much as they love the sourdough. My grandmother, Alei Hashalom, she loved that sponge cake upside down on the soda bottle. You can't look at it, don't talk to it, don't think about it. Otherwise, it would flop. So when we're waiting for the sourdough, when we're waiting for the sponge cake, obviously, much more significantly, when we're waiting for health and parnasa and children and shidduchim, then we say, Hashem, please, and I need you, and where are you, and you have to. Do we ever afterwards say, thank you? Thank you. And even if that date isn't my husband or my wife, but thank you for meeting that person. And I don't know where that will go. And I learned something from this experience, and I learned something about myself. And it is a stop on my journey. And api Hashem yachanu ve'api Hashem yisa'u. I know I was meant to go on this date and meet that person and have that conversation and learn that thing about myself or about that person. And now, who can I think of for them? And maybe they'll think of someone for me. And now they're part of my network and my life experience. And thank you. Even if it's not the one, thank you for it being one of the ones on my journey. Beforehand, we offer our tefillah, but do after the fact we say, thank you? But the main point I'm trying to tell you is not my point at all, to Rav David Avuchatzera, and I thought we were going to finish the entire new page, of which I think we got through the first line. But says Rav David Avuchatzera, every tefillah we offer should not be about me, because I want to, because I like it, because everyone else has it. We couch every tefillah. Hashem, here's what's on tap today, and here's why everything I have on tap, if you help me with it, I'll be a better Eved Hashem. If that meeting goes well, if that effort goes well, if that journey goes smoothly, then I can be a better Eved Hashem. I can be a better. So I'm asking for all of it, not out of ego, but out of Elokus. I'm asking for it all, not for me, but for you. This is a new chapter in my book. Did you get my book? You can download it, please God. You could pre-order the book. Pre-order, special rate. And please God, I can't believe I'm going to say this publicly, but maybe by doing so, it'll actually get me to do it. But I hope to write it this summer. So maybe by this fall, you'll be able to actually get my book. I don't have a title. You could submit yours, Ego versus Elokus. And that's one of the chapters on ego versus, our whole life is determined by ego versus Elokus, which is all part of the embrace your place and we are where we're meant to be. Let go, let God. Maybe embrace your place will be the title. But one of the chapters is that all of prayer is either ego or Elokus. Why am I davening to you? Why am I asking you for these things? Is it ego? I want my need, my honor, my comfort, my convenience, my pleasure. Is it me? Is it ego? Or no? My entire faith and my entire lifelong ongoing conversation with you, Hashem, is not about ego. It's about Elokus. It's not about me, but it's about we. It's about you in me and how we can improve and repair this world. It's not about me, it's about we. That's pretty good. I just thought of that. Okay, somewhere copyright that. Quickly write that down. It's not about me, it's about... So ego versus Elokus, that's a chapter in the book. Every time we daven, every tefillah we offered from a sitter, from a tehillim, in shul, or as significantly and many ways more authentically, from our heart, in the kitchen, and in the carpool, and in the boardroom, and in the operating room, when we offer that tefillah, it's Hashem, Help me with that thing, not for me, but for we. I want to be your loyal servant. I want to be your ambassador and agent. I want to be your messenger. I want to pursue and fulfill my mission, but I can't if I don't have the things that I'm asking and davening for. It's a radical shift in the whole orientation of not only how we daven, but how we live. And it's so filled with meaning, and it's so filled with purpose, and it's so filled with selflessness instead of selfishness. And the whole focus on the ego and the I and the self leads to such unhappiness and such anxiety. Because when I'm in charge and I'm in control and I'm responsible for the outcome, I can't even get out of bed. But when I have a partner, it's not me, but we, when we're in it together and I know you're by my side and I know you're helping me and I know however it comes out is the way it's meant to be, now let's go. We've got this. We're going to do this. That was the beginning of last week's parsha. Hashem didn't say, lech el paro, go to paro. What did Hashem say? Bo el paro. And the image is amazing. Hashem puts his arm around Moshe and puts his arm around every one of us and he says, nu, bo. Let's go. I've got a mission for you today. I'm not sending you on it. I'm coming with you on it. Bo El Paro. He puts his arm around us and he says, let's go. This is our mission. And I want to be very clear. Some people's mission is curing cancer. And some people's mission is bringing peace to the Middle East. And some people's mission is getting to the end of the day. That's their mission. Struggling with whatever physical, mental, emotional challenge. And their mission is get to the end of today. Get to the end of today with sanity, with good health, with faith. Get to the end of today. Some person's mission is get these kids in bed safely tonight after a little time on Estee's playground, after breakfast, lunch, and dinner being fed, after a nap time, get them healthy, get them whole, get them to bed. That's your mission, this stage, and this mode of your life. Our mission every day, when I talk about embrace your place and our mission and our moment in life, it's not all monumental. It's not all on this side of the camera. It's not all making world peace. Our missions are micro missions. And our missions are not measured by how public they are, how much influence, and whether we're an influencer, how many eyeballs and followers. Our mission are broken down into micro missions. Our mission right now is make a shahakol in this cup of coffee. And the mission right now is don't spill it on myself. And my mission right now is to not drink the coffee out of ego, but out of elokus, shahakol ni'ebidvaro. Hashem, it's all from you. I'll close with one more email about that because it just reminded me. Dear Rabbi, I'm a bit behind but listening to classes on Emunah. I'm up to 128. That's a bit behind, but it's changed my life for the better. I just want to share a story with you that gave me my first step in starting my own Spot Him journal. I call it Kel Mistater. So this author has a journal called Kel Mistater, Hidden God, and it's his Spot Him journal, looking for God every day. I was doing my morning routine after davening Nates. I need to pack food for the boys, eat breakfast, pack my food before heading to work. My son was having difficulty getting the word out of what he wants for a sandwich. I wanted to make what he wants, but I need to know what it is. I was getting impatient and annoyed. I saw a small bit of cake topping, and I thought, yum. I made a bracha, and it hit me. Shehakol ni'eh bedvaro. Everything is from him, even this annoying situation. In that moment, everything calmed down. I felt like all 126 Emunah Shiurim led to that moment. It was the Kabbalah that I made to make bracha slowly, being mindful of the meaning and including the ambiance, pleasant or otherwise. Shehakol, because he made a bracha in that moment and he realized, shehakol, not only those who are cooperating comes from Hashem, even the one who's not cooperating. Shehakol, it's all from Hashem. It's all meant for us. It's all from above. It's all carefully curated, choreographed for us. It's all from shehakol. You could find Hashem in monumental moments, the last hostage coming home, number 250 in that cemetery, Ron Reish Nun, and you see Hashem, and you see Hashem in the frosting of the cake. Davin Nate's pack for the boys, eat breakfast. I thought he said he had a workout in there. So I was going to wonder, did he eat the frosting after the workout? But you see, even in the frosting of the cake, even in the frosting of the cake, Hashem is in the frosting on the cake. That you snuck while trying to pack breakfast with the annoying kid. That helps you realize shehakol. It's all. The ambience, the environment, the people, the things, the weather, and everything in it. Nebuch daven for us in South Florida. It's going to feel like the 30s in the next couple of days. The 30s. We didn't move to Florida for the 30s. Raining iguanas. I'm just joking, daven for us. But it's going to be cold. And Hashem is in the cold. Hashem is in the heat in August. and he's in the cold in February, and he's in whatever the weather is, wherever you are, and whatever snow you have to plow or find someone else to pay to plow, Hashem is in it all, shehakol. The ambiance, the environment, the weather, the people, those who are pleasant and those who are frustrating and annoying, shehakol. He's in it all if you look for him and you find him. And then it keeps you calm and serene. And then you say, what's my mission in this moment? What's my mission in this moment? Am I acting out of ego? Am I acting out of elokus? And when I turn to you and I ask Hashem, what's on tap today? And at the end of the day, thank you, Hashem. It's all not about my ego. It's all about my elokus. I want to be your best servant. I want to serve you. I want to fulfill my mission. I want to repair and redeem your world. I want to get out of myself. Because another chapter in the book is why that leads to a better life. Maybe the egomaniac has a much better life. The egomaniac has everything they want. The egomaniac is living a life all about them. So maybe the ego narcissist has it all. Go check how that's worked out for them. How's the marriage of the ego narcissist? How is the relationship with children of the egomaniac narcissist? How's the egomaniac narcissist doing in business? What's his relationship with his colleagues, with his clients? How's the egomaniac narcissist doing in, how is that all working out in life? How is their health and their happiness? Most importantly, how are they doing? Versus the person who can get out of themselves and care and give to others. Look at the quality and look at the meaning and look at the purpose of that life. So life is divided into those two simple categories. And it's that easy and it's that simple. And where, in which column will your name appear? Ego or elokus? Is it about us or is it about being on a mission from Hashem? Am I a taker or am I a giver? Is my life about my rights and entitlements or my duties, responsibilities, and obligations? Do I live every moment for what's in it for me, or do I live every moment for what is my mission? And the answer to happiness and holiness is found in where I put my name in which column, which tells me my whole orientation of life, but also tells me how to frame my tefillah, my prayer, and how I ask everything from Hashem. We turn off the stream. We have time for one question because I went over time today. I got a little too excited talking about my French fries. But we have time for one question. So to those who are turning it off, stay happy, stay healthy, stay holy, and visit us in Florida, and you can participate in questions and answers in person. And to those who are here, we have time for one.